And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and contrary to popular belief, Adam and I are not having a diss fight at all.
Oh, man. Can you imagine what that would look like?
Right in studio. Just let her rip. You never know. We've still got lots of time, I guess. It's never going to happen. It's been 4 years.
I don't know.
And more if you add the rest.
With ballot box and...
Yeah. We should actually do it in rap. I think that would be quite hilarious. Might be able to raise some money.
Oh, yeah. No. Yes. There's an episode of MASH where... I think it's Hawkeye and BJ pretend that they're fighting for Frank's birthday to give him a birthday present. So, maybe that should be a prize for Raise Your Voice.
I'm outraged by the mere presence of this man in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Yep, sound like Alex.
Well, we can drink.
Alex Jones, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, well, all right. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. And you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Hopefully, I won't have to add another podcast app. Today, we will head to Toronto, where allegations of hazing, assault, and sexual assault have resulted in six teens being charged at St. Michael's College. Is this problem worse than St. Mike's wants us to think? And then it's another week of scandals from the PC Party of Ontario, the return of Tanya Granick-Allen, Doug Ford's chief of staff, new rules for welfare recipients. We'll talk about all that. And then finally, the environment. There's been a lot of environmental news out there. It's not good, and it seems like no one is talking about it, so we will. But first of all, Brexit has come up again right now. Well, maybe not this exact minute, but today over in over in the UK, the United Kingdom has submitted their draft Brexit agreement to the European Union. And today they got the approval of sort of the technical advisors of the EU. It's going to come up for a full vote at a summit on Sunday. So all 28 members have to rubber stamp the agreement for it to basically go into effect. That is not a sure thing because Spain is making waves that they want a resolution to the whole Gibraltar situation, which dates back to 1713, by the way. so, you know, maybe we'll get a resolution to a 400-year-old problem in, 3 days. Unlikely. but then Theresa May has problems back home because a lot of hardcore Brexiteers in her own government do not like this deal. They don't think it goes far enough, and there are about 24 MPs who are saying, you know what, they are in favor of just having no deal and exiting the EU without a deal. The Economist had a pretty good explainer about why that is, let's say, malarkey, why that might do more harm than good. But it seems like, to me, that Theresa May said shortly after she became PM that no deal was better than a bad deal. And that seems like a bluff that the EU has called, that now the bad deal will have to be the deal. I mean, if the bad deal from the perspective of the Brexit people, not a bad deal for people who want, Ireland to not have a hard border or for to have this access to markets and the supply chain that England has enjoyed.
He just knew that whatever deal it was, whatever came down the pipe, that there was going to be this. You could have predicted that this was going to happen. I think lots of people did. It's like it could be the most stellar deal and everybody's happy, but yet there's always somebody. You covered a lot of stuff there in that opening. in terms of Spain, as you said, Gibraltar, Little Gibraltar, which was the Treaty of Utrecht, I think, whatever battle that was. Mm-hmm. Spain had promised not long ago, at least president of Spain, that, everything's fine, it's cool. But then I guess they're a little bit famous for doing stuff like this. Like, well, wait a second. Gibraltar. Gibraltar's is a place where I think it was something like in terms of referendum The majority of people there that live there are UK citizens. It's a British overseas territory.
Mm-hmm.
98%, I think, voted that they wanted to stay in the European Union. So it is like this unique little alcove. So it's probably going to become an issue, even though it's just this tiny place. And also, as you mentioned, Ireland. That may be the one that potentially, other than the confidence vote, and the confidence letters are piling up. I think they need something like 48 to get rid of Theresa May. It looks like they're not going to hit that number because I think with Michael Gove came out. Mm-hmm. There are certain high-profile conservatives. He's considered a bit of a red Tory, I guess, you know, in some ways, which I can't really see. But anyway, we'll get into that. has backed her. He was asked to be the Brexit secretary, and he's like, no, you didn't ask me the first time. I don't want to do it. But he's
still on the third Brexit secretary.
Yeah, exactly. It's going like Trump's cabinet, just firing through people.
Except with 70% less corruption.
As we know, the DUP, the Party from Northern Ireland that's propping up the government currently may pull the plug. There actually was a vote, obviously it wasn't a confidence vote, about the budget or some budgetary measures. I don't think there were, it wasn't a obviously major budgetary measure, but not only did the DUP abstain from certain things, they voted with Labour. And they hate Labour, right?
Mm-hmm.
They hate Labour as a party and everything they stand for because the DUP are...
And Corbyn.
Probably, and Corbyn. Yeah, they're probably more right-wing.
They're okay with Labour, maybe not so much with Corbyn.
If you can picture a party more right-wing than the UK Conservative Party, it's the DUP. And, of course, the issue of the border, what were they calling it? The backstop. All the talk
backstop,
is about the
yeah.
backstop. It's like they're going to come up with a temporary provision where the EU regs will apply for an extended period. And then I think Elizabeth – I knew I was going to say Elizabeth May. I got to put like 10 bucks into the swear jar when I say Elizabeth May, when I mean Theresa May and vice versa. Yes, hard border, soft border. Northern Ireland definitely, at least the DUP, want to stay part of the UK. But Theresa May said that they were going to solve this issue in terms of hardening or softening the border and trade with technology.
Cool.
As to what that technology is, we don't really know. Is it
cyborgs?
Cyborgs. RFID chips, X-rays, we don't know. But currently, when you drive across that border, you can't tell.
Right.
That
yeah.
they're actually technically two different countries. But again, this is something in the long view may change.
Right. There seems to be, like, there's a provision in the agreement that there's a bit of a runway. There's like 1 or 2 years for stuff to get sorted out. But there's also options to increase that runway to another couple of years if necessary. It almost feels like everybody on all sides feels like they just need more time to find the magical solution that hasn't occurred to them in the last 2 years. That's going to make yeah. everybody satisfied with this. And it's nobody's going to be satisfied with this. And I think that that's the lesson of the entire Brexit situation. It was a thin vote on the basis of this one action will solve all our problems. And all it did was create a bunch of new problems, not the least of which is like the extraordinary unconfidence, if that's a word, or
it
the misconfidence in the Conservative government, which already had a tenuous grasp of power before the deal. I mean, it wasn't too long ago, back in July, that Boris Johnson and the Brexit secretary at the time, David Davis, both resigned because just, you know, from the government working out with itself what the deal was going to be. And now that deal has gone forth to the EU, waiting for the EU to be approved. And there's this hard deadline of March 29. They have to, it's, you know, they have to be out of the apartment by midnight, so to speak. And now you have members in the cabinet. Health Minister Matt Hancock saying, you know what, it's not impossible to have a second referendum. He said he wouldn't support it, but it's not impossible. He didn't slam the door shut, which makes you wonder what kind of conversations are maybe going on behind closed doors in cabinet. They're saying, like, maybe that's the way out of this. Maybe that's the magical solution. We'll have a second referendum, and, you know, people now wiser knowing what the fuster cluck this is going to look like. Well, maybe we'll get a couple of people to vote smarter and we can avoid the whole situation. And, you know, and it's like the line from Shaun of the Dead. We'll just go to the pub and wait for this whole thing to blow over.
And I think there are lots of people that are doing that, but they've got one eye on the TV set going,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not as if the referendum was official anyway, you know? It's like the one in the plebiscite in Calgary, and it's like, okay, yeah, we don't want the Olympics, so we're not going to have them, but yeah, we want the Brexit. You don't, but, and it was a narrow margin as well. Yeah, and I don't think another referendum will necessarily help them at this point. Now, Theresa May also was sort of stirring it up a bit. She was addressing the business community,
mm-hmm,
and this was one of the headlines that they said that the Brexit deal will reduce the number of EU queue jumpers. But this, of course, this is one of these straw man arguments, because there is, like, the way the rules are now, EU people are welcome to come to the UK and work.
Mm-hmm.
So she's setting it up as if it's, you know, we'll reduce the number of people coming from the EU, which is nonsense, because that will happen, but it's like, as for now, the rules are in place. It's something like almost 4 million, I think 3.8 million EU citizens in the UK, which is 6% of the total population. And I didn't realize there's 1 million Polish. Mm-hmm. I actually did notice it. I talked about this before, but when we were in London, how all of the, mm-hmm, you know, let's say former immigrant jobs were, like, you go to the hotel or whatever, it was somebody that was Polish. I noticed it this time. It was like, hey, everybody's Polish. A million Polish people. That's pretty amazing. I think it sounds like the ones that are currently there before the deadline will be able to get some kind of status easier than anybody that tries afterward.
Yeah.
So again, that's another regulation that's going to have to go into place, because I think that a lot of the people there were worried. And the amount of people coming from the EU to the UK has gone down significantly, I think, in the past little while, because they're like, oh, I'm not going to go there.
Well, it's all part of, like, an overall, before Brexit, Britain had, or the UK had, the fastest growing economy in the G7. Now they have the slowest.
Yep. So stay away.
Rebounded. Yeah. And
it sounds like Poland is booming a bit anyway. So maybe, you know, there's,
right,
things have spread eastward, I think.
Right. It's a situation because no one's ever left the EU. No one knows what that would look like. And so, you know, if you're thinking about, and, you know, in the EU and you're thinking about investing, you know, you're probably not looking at Britain. You probably haven't been looking at Britain or anywhere in the UK. So,
I was going to say, you know, when you drop the tea bags in the kitchen and they go everywhere? That's probably what it's going to look like. I don't know.
But I mean,
you can't,
yeah,
say that for sure, but all these little things that don't seem significant are adding up to the one big headache.
Right. Can Theresa May or somebody, like, let's say there's a situation where she's defeated, the government falls, there's an election.
That's possible.
And Corbyn somehow scrapes enough together to form the next government, whether that's outright Labour or part of a Labour-led coalition.
Mm-hmm.
Can he just call up the EU and say, like, okay, we're we're back in, like, we're gonna figure this out, but, like, we're not moving out on March 29th.
Yeah, it's hard to tell, because I don't think Corbyn hasn't said that the Brexit wouldn't happen. It would just happen differently,
mm-hmm,
right? So it's like, you're going to start over? You're going to stick with this? They would obviously, if it was a new government, have to start over to some degree. But as you said about the summit on the weekend, it's like, there's lots of things, like, for example, the fishing grounds around the UK.
Right. And that's something a lot of people in Scotland are concerned about.
Yeah, it's going to be, yeah. And is Scotland going to stay? I have my suspicions that if this does go through, which it sounds like it will, that Scotland, once, you know, again, it's going to come up.
Well, I think on the EU's end, they want it done with.
Like, yeah.
It's, you know, because Britain's having a fit. You know, they're not sure what it wants. So one party has to be sure. And I think the EU just wants it done, regardless of, you know, Spain saber rattling about Gibraltar. I'm sure there's going to be some sort of back channel thing. It's like, you know, we'll worry about Gibraltar. We'll
sign a new agreement
just, you know,
for another,
like,
100 years.
Yeah, we'll just sign this and, you know, we'll everything will sort itself out. which seems to be the prevailing attitude. But I think the EU wants it done. I think that they can't help that Britain doesn't seem to know. Or Britain knows what they want. They want their cake and eat it too. And that's,
yeah, they want, you know, strong relationships and trade and, you know, everybody staying tight and secure. so why not stay in the EU? Exactly.
Right.
Oh, we kept the pound, though, because it's the pound.
Right. Well, which they had anyway.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre. I mean, the whole thing is bizarre because Britain or the UK wasn't ever like a full-fledged member of the EU. It was always like... It was like Counselor Troy on Next Gen, where she was like in Starfleet, but she didn't have to wear the uniform or, you know...
The funky outfit.
Right. You know, she was, you know...
There's our interesting aunt in from...
Right. So, you know, that's kind of how you think about the UK and the EU. So
yeah.
It seemed like a pretty good deal to begin with, and now they are stuck trying to...
Trash it.
Well, again, they're stuck with trying to figure out, like, how to have their cake and eat it, too. And it's like, mm-hmm. You can't. You have to give up something. Either you have to give up EU membership, or you get to enjoy the benefits of EU membership and giving up a bit of your sovereignty. It's like, you can't be your own sovereign country and still be a part of a bigger community. That's not how it works. That's not how any
that
of this works.
The art of negotiation, give and take, right? So
yes. Down in Toronto, there seems to be a lot of taking instead of giving, which is unusual for a Catholic school, or maybe not unusual given the institution. But the news broke last week that there are two videos circulating of student-athletes at St. Michael's College, which is a renowned private Catholic school. A lot of athletes, well-known athletes have come out of there. A lot of well-known people in various industries have come out of there. But now it may go down as being famous for its hazing rituals. So the two videos in question, one featured a kid who basically sounded like he was being waterboarded as initiation to the football team. And then another instance of a football player being sodomized with an inanimate object as an initiation, as a hazing ritual. Since last week, six boys have been charged by the Toronto police. Four expulsions have happened. Two other tapes have emerged. And there's been a lot of questions about what St. Mike's knew and when they knew it, because the police heard this from the media when the media started calling and asking for comment about these videos that were posted on social media.
Yes, and did you see that bit with the two mothers of students giving
it
to the media? It was like a bad 22-minute sketch. It's your fault.
One of them was Mary Walsh in makeup.
Exactly. She was about to say something like fake news, because that was the feel of that whole thing. It's your fault.
Right.
It's your fault our kids are idiots. Like, that was the tone of that thing.
And then somebody apparently tried to intimidate like a CP24 crew in their car.
Yeah. See, and then, you know, this is what, to me, in my opinion, this is one of the key problems with insular private schools run by religious interests, sports or no sports. Sports adds a layer to it.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't really anything new, although I think there's been an uptick in this kind of stuff. The only time I'd ever heard of the past of these sort of assaults is there's been a few prison stories over the years where this is a punishment, let's say. But if you just, as we do the homework for the show, I just did the Google in terms of, I put hazing in football, Maryland, McGill, where they call, and that one of the McGill students spoke out about it this past week.
Mm-hmm.
They call it Dr. Broom. Mm-hmm. Vermont, somebody who was abused in Vermont, I don't know if it was University of Vermont, committed suicide. Oklahoma, Georgia, Pennsylvania, they call it No Gay Thursday. So it's not as if this is new, and I don't know why the hell everybody is surprised at this. Plus, there is this is sort of a side thing, but a culture of abuse that has gone on with certain Catholic institutions. I believe there's a link to that. This obviously isn't a public school.
No.
I saw when the principal was giving his talk, in the background is, you know, everybody's got the backdrop now, which is essentially an ad for the institution. It's under the direction of the Basilian Fathers. I'm like, where do I know that name from? They're the ones that were challenging that sex abuse suit in, was it in Toronto? Oh, no, Sudbury. It was in Sudbury. This person was abused by the Basilian brothers or a brother and was awarded $2.5 million, and they were contesting it. It's like, okay, so these are the people that are running under the guidance or under the direction of these people, here is this institution. So couple that with that sports jock mentality thing where this seems to become a thing. And it's not new, but I think social media has now, it's the kind of thing like if it wasn't for the video.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as if this is the first time it's happened when you've got people that were there 25, 35 years ago. Some of the real old timers are like, oh, I never heard of this, never happened before. I don't believe them personally.
No.
These guys, I mean, maybe it didn't happen to them. You know, maybe they were the top jock or something and everybody left them alone.
Well, that's...
But it's the people, as with any bullying, it's the people on the bottom or... And there was also that student on the news who said, you know, this is completely true. Because that closed meeting was just for alumni. Media not allowed. They're standing across the street.
Yeah.
And this kid came over and said, oh, yeah, you know what? Like, this does not surprise me at all. And I left the school because it was terrible to me. But, of course, that's bad for the image. So you can't say that. Of course you can't say that. Sorry, I threw a lot in there.
No.
I really did.
Bill Dumphy wrote, who was an alumnus of St. Mike's, wrote in Globe and Mail, and then he was on Canada Land, and he was talking about how it didn't surprise him. He was shocked at how far it went, but the culture of what we now call toxic masculinity has been there for decades. And, you know, Dunphy talked about how, you know, He was at the school for an hour before a science teacher punched him.
Clocked him one.
Hey, welcome to school. You're another Dumphy, because he comes from a family of seven boys.
And that was a lot. Is that the 25 years ago or further?
That was 25 years.
Yeah, okay. It's the same guy, yeah.
So, yeah, and you know how teachers would throw chalk at students. And Dunphy talked about one incident where one of the teachers there, a priest no less, would have you, if you misbehaved, he would have you, quote unquote, join the Air Force, where you would basically hold a paper airplane out. You know, I'd stretch your hand and hold a paper airplane in each hand, which, you know, is kind of like a torture position. You know, it would be
old
like,
school punishment.
It would be called enhanced interrogation now if you were in the CIA. It would be a stress position of having to hold your arms out for whole class period, which may be like 45 minutes to an hour.
That'll fix it, yeah.
And of course, these kind of institutions place a high premium on tradition and on history, and so these things get passed down. And of course, the longer sort of things are allowed to happen, sort of the less shocking they are, the sort of more numb you get when you come to expect, like, a teacher might punch you in the stomach or a teacher will have you, like, holding a paper airplane with your arm outstretched for an hour. That just becomes another day at school. So, of course, it's going to go up a notch. So, for people who are coming out saying, well, this didn't happen when I went to school 25 years ago. Yeah, things evolve. Things change. Things get worse when a system of abuse is not addressed because there's escalation. It gets worse unless you put a stop to it. And that's what seems to happen. Remember, I won't go so far as to say people were sodomized with objects as initiation or as hazing back in, you know, the 60s or the 70s. Could it have happened? Sure. But is it surprising that, you know, just sort of regular hazing gives way to these more cruel, more abusive forms of hazing? No. That's what happens. It escalates.
Well, and as I said before, I mean, there's a history of abuse within the Catholic Church. It has to be said, right? So whether, I mean, I'm sure that this kind of thing isn't exclusive to just private Catholic school. You know, there are probably other private institutions out there where, the punishments are sort of biblical in scope, but also people have obviously been sodomized by other things. But it has to have an origin point somewhere. Now, they've shut down all the extracurricular activities for the year. And that's everything, not just the sports, even though it would seem like –
it seems like sports.
is the problem.
Not a lot of hazing in your book.
I didn't realize this, and this seems to be the excuse that they're using for the principal and the admins not calling the police right away, is that a private school, the rules are different. Mm-hmm. So if it was just a publicly funded Catholic school, mm-hmm. like you call, you know, child services, child protective service, or the police right away.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do this, and it would seem that they don't need to, which is ridiculous. It's sort of
right.
It echoes back to that whole, well, this is an internal issue, we'll deal with it. Like the abuse you've seen with the Jehovah Witnesses, where it's like, oh, we'll just deal with it. And it just goes mm-hmm. on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Residential school, you know, it covers that whole swath. It seems like this, I mean, this obviously isn't a minor thing, but it's all culturally, you know, incorporating that whole, you know, you're elite, you're in a closed society, there's sports, there's priests. It's
right.
Like this is the end result. I don't know why the hell everybody's so shocked. It's like, oh, I can't believe this is happening.
You can, like, I mean, you can
really,
you could swing it. You could swing a dead cat at any of this. Like it's insular. It's religious. It's all male. These are all sort of, you know, it's sports.
Cause
it's all sort of any two of these things together is a recipe for,
well, you said
abuse.
It toxic masculinity. I mean, yeah. people probably don't know this, but I guess I was a bit of a jock when I was younger and played a lot of hockey until adolescence, where people wanted to just knock the crap out of each other rather than play hockey. I played soccer longer, but you know, hockey in particular, like, it's not behind the scenes. There's a hierarchy. There's all of that stuff. Now, I only really played house league, so it wasn't. I know in the rep teams that there's any number of stories. You can Google that, where the team goes to another place and then something happens, right?
And given my experience with hockey parents in the modern context, I can only imagine. It's
oh yeah,
worse.
And oh, that's definitely gotten worse. I mean, we had some classic hockey parents, but it was like they were a character. But now it's like coming after the ref, and oh yeah, it's just it's out of control. But that's. It's cultural. You know, I mean, it's not like that in every country. There's definitely way more to it. You'll notice off the top there when I listed those places where the hazing and abuse has happened, a lot of it was in the States now, as to whether that's kind of creeping up here. In that, you know, because the idea is St. Mike's put a lot of money into the athletics. It's something that they take great pride. I think that, you know, the shot that they show of the mural on the side
right.
has got sports people on it, right?
Sports.
So they... Yeah. And they're proud of their, you know, a lot of them have become Leafs
and
football play, you know, you name it, right? So it's like that's their point of pride. It's obviously not for everybody in the school, but it seems to be this funneling of, you know,
and
we're,
keep in
we're
mind
making tomorrow's leaders
right.
by teaching them sports and how to abuse each other.
And keep in mind the emphasis of a lot of American colleges on sports.
Yeah, because
those
scholarship,
athletic
right?
programs are worth yeah. millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
And so the pressure is on to succeed. To go back to your point about the rules and who reported what, I mean, I think that's the biggest takeaway from all of this. Because there are a lot of – I've seen people online say, well, maybe the principal did the right thing and, you know, having to say – you know, reaching out to the victim before taking the whole thing to the police department. But there's a double standard here, because I think if this happened at a public school, you would see people picketing out front demanding that they close down the school, burn it down, and salt the earth. Because the outrage, I think, would be greater. I think the community, because of its access, because of its wealth –
oh, absolutely.
Here buys a certain amount of, well, what about, and, you know, things, you know, it's one thing to judge, but, you know, maybe they handled it different. I think that because of that elitism, there's a certain comfort with giving them more slack, whereas if this happened at, you know, public school number 3 in a poor area of Scarborough or something, then the roof would have fallen in by now.
They handled it exactly how the elite... The real elite.
Right. They wanted to handle it quietly away from the TV cameras, unfortunately.
And that's why they were blaming the media. But
right.
I wonder when they're going to desegregate. But anyway, that's another story.
That's given some of the responses I got from people running for Catholic board trustee, that is an uphill battle that we can't solve today.
Yes.
Speaking of media elites, CFRU is in the middle of Raise Your Voice. The Raise Your Voice funding drive continues till November the 24th. That's this coming Saturday, and it's going to reach its epic season finale tomorrow. We're doing a 24-hour live broadcast from 10C down on Cardin Street, but you can even give to CFRU right now. We are raising $5,000 to continue the work being done by the Mobile Studio, which is a roving radio station that aims to bring the voices of the marginalized to the airwaves. So this mobile studio goes around to different public schools in Guelph, different neighborhood groups. It does a lot of good work. A lot of kids get excited when the radio rolls into school and they get the chance to grill famous Guelphites like MPP Mike Schreiner or Mayor Cam Guthrie. So we're raising, hoping to raise $5,000. And if you'd like to find out more or would like to donate, you can go to cfru.ca/donations. You can give any amount you feel comfortable that you can part with. Any and all amounts are appreciated. But if you do give $25, you will get the CFR merch of your choice, be it a mug or a t-shirt or a toque. But you'll also get a chance to enter a raffle to win several cool prizes. Including among them is two crony passes for Kazoo Fest in 2019, two passes for Hillside in 2019, a Guelph Music's Fender Bluetooth speaker.
Ooh.
A Mondo Yoga 90-minute ocean flow room session, which I believe is the sensory deprivation tank at Mondo Yoga. So you may have heard about sensory deprivation tanks on TV. So you may want to check that out.
Very intrigued.
Royal Cat Records effed up curated 3-pack LP, 10C Community Hub 1-year membership, $25 gift card for the U of G's hospitality services. That's for food on or off campus. So if you're not on campus, you can take it to several off-campus establishments as well. There are also tickets for the River Run Center and Majida's tickets for their event series. Lots of good stuff. So go to cfru.ca/donations now and make a pledge. And we appreciate any and all monies we can receive. You want to mail it in. You want to bring cash. We'll take cash. We'll take your cash.
Checks, credit
card. PayPal, credit card, money orders. No Bitcoin. No Bitcoin.
No Bitcoin. If you want to mention our show in the memo line, we wouldn't mind that at all.
Yeah, we'd like to know who's listening. So yeah, donate now to CFRU. Raise your voice on through Saturday. We're going to take a break now and then come back with some more news. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, your community station.
To get things shaking on this, the coldest day so far. That was the Brooks, new into the station from the album Freewheelin' Talkin'. And that was Live Free. And I was just saying to Adam there that actually initially thought it was an instrumental. And I listened and was like, we're going to play that anyway because that is hot. Very, very hot track. So the Brooks, check them out. They are on an unknown label because it's not on here.
The label. It's a tight ship we run here.
Indica. Oh, Indica. There you go.
There we go.
They must have a marijuana sideline or something. Anyway.
Cool.
It's funky, man.
It's quite don't know where to take things sometimes. So we thought we were done talking about the Ford government. Like, maybe we could just, like, skip it this
put
week.
A pause?
But, no. You know, no, because Doug Ford is keeping a Donald Trump level of scandals going. So it started this past Saturday with a resolution at the PC Progressive Conservative Party convention that basically said that there should be a debate to remove gender identity education from Ontario schools and curricula. Now, this is non-binding, and it would not be a debate in the legislature. It would be a debate at next year's PC policy convention. But it was none other than Tanya Granick Allen.
Who? Oh, wait, she's still there.
That's number one. How is she still around? Because she was removed as a Tory candidate before the spring election. She was going to run in a Mississauga riding, or she was running in a Mississauga riding, and then her bigotry went just far enough that she was asked to step aside, and she called it a betrayal to social conservatives. So I thought she was done, but no, she apparently got the invite and RSVP to the policy convention and brought this forward. So yeah, this immediately kind of sent trans activists and people who identify as allies of trans people. That's kind of sent them for a loop. Although Doug Ford said it's done, it's not happening. So there's that. So it's problem solved, right?
Yeah, he said he is killing it, but it's not dead yet. It's one of those things. A lot of you out there have probably been to policy conventions or similar things. They pass all kinds of stuff.
I think it's a bit generous to say that a lot of people.
Okay, sorry. Some of our listeners, we know for a fact, have been to policy conventions, and you know that all kinds of stuff comes.
It's not a Star Wars movie, is what I'm saying.
No. That really boring one was that giant, yeah. Oh, don't say that. We're going to get the hate mail now. So you said Star Wars was boring. Anyway, yes, a policy convention is exactly like one of the Star Wars or many. No, anyway.
Totally. It's like the middle of the Phantom Menace, yeah.
Yes, exactly. It is. That's so true, though. Anyway, Danielle and Greenwich, I'd forgotten about her. She's back. What did she call it? That gender identity is a liberal ideology. And that's sort of a double entendre because she...
highly controversial and unscientific liberal ideology.
So she means Kathleen Wynne, but she also means liberal as in, how dare you impose this liberal thought on our children? Why doesn't she send her kids to St. Mike's? No, that's... sorry. A little bit of a jab there. I don't know if that was called for, but... The views expressed on this show are most of the time ours and ours alone. Yes, policy convention. There was, 1,000 delegates there. And, of course, they did spend a lot of time jabbing at the feds. It's the feds. Everything is Justin Trudeau's fault.
Oh, yeah, it's the Justin Trudeau show. Yeah.
Something that has come to light out of, or at least troublesome this week as well, was the French cuts. Francois Legault was in town, and he said, who is a right-winger, by the way? Very disappointed when it happened. And I was just reading a little bit about it before we came on air, that somebody from the party has deviated from the line and said,
yes.
I'm not happy with this. And, of course, they said, it's that whole big tent stuff.
I think she's Francophonie.
Yes. And represents a largely French riding in the Eastern Ontario.
Hold on, I'll get her name.
Eastern Ontario, as if I'm translating. But yeah, this is one of those, they'll always say, well, we have a big tent, so we can include the social conservatives like Tanya Allen Greenwich and my favorite, Sam Oosterhoff. And then the French...
He's going to get a restraining order these days.
The French MPP is allowed to criticize because, well, she's allowed to, which in some ways I suppose is a good thing, but she'll probably be shut down or sidelined soon enough because that's how they roll. What other things have been happening? Yes, well, today, there's so much happened this week. We could almost put like half an hour to this topic too, because there was, or do you want to comment on that before I totally go on another
direction? The trans thing? Well, the only thing about the trans thing was that it happened. The overwhelming majority of the party membership who were there and voted on it approved it. Doug Ford comes out Monday and says, no, we're not going to do that. Never mind. It's all good. And then on Tuesday, Lisa McLeod issues a statement. Tuesday was Trans Day of Remembrance, if you don't know. And not only did she pay honor to people who identify as trans, but she also took a victory lap as one of the people who helped pass the motion to establish the Trans Day of Remembrance a couple of years ago. So it's like, what are you doing? That on Saturday you're calling it a liberal ideology and unscientific, and then on Tuesday you're saying this is a deeply important occasion that we must respect and mark and it's bizarre. It's just bizarre. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, because a couple of tweets I saw was like, wow, you've got a lot of nerve. People really have a lot of nerve. So we've only got another couple of minutes, but other things this week, the quashing of the also very liberal labor laws that were passed. So minimum wage frozen again. Those two paid sick days are gone. And the it's going to be – it sounds like the businesses can ask for doctor's notes for very minor things. So, of course, you know, what are doctor hours? You got to take time off your job to go get a note because you had a bad head cold that you didn't want to give to the masses.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff is also – and they have that strange logic of the lifting of the rent control. It's like, yes, the lifting of rent controls will increase the supply of housing, which is absolute nonsense.
That Amanda Simard is her name.
Oh, there you go.
Amanda Simard.
Thank you, Internet.
Thank you, Internet. Yes.
Because she's a backbencher, right? She's not a cabinet.
Yeah, she does. She actually, I was sitting almost right above her when I was at the Queen's Park last week.
Did they give you a little play-by-play who's sitting where? And in this
corner. No, there's seating plans that you can find online of who's.
Did Mike wave to you from the? Hey, I guess I can't do that.
I think that's one of the no-nos. Is like you have to be.
Because you can address the gallery if it's.
He can address the gallery.
And say we'd like and to they, welcome. Adam A. Donaldson from.
And I did get one. And I did get one of those.
You did. Wow.
Probably watch it on the YouTube channel. But
excellent.
YouTube channel, but the Queen's Park.
I think
YouTube
you should
channel.
Splice it and get it on.
Oh, I should actually. Yeah. But the other thing I wanted to address is that apparently we're probably looking at the plug being pulled on high-speed rail from the Toronto-Windsor corridor.
After the 30th study, yeah.
Right. The plug isn't being pulled quite yet. They're letting the environmental assessment proceed, but they're now sort of widening the mandate. Like, would high-speed rail be good, or would having more VIA trains be good, or would having more buses or more highways be good? Which sort of dilutes the main point, which is that if you're sitting in a bus, you're sitting on the roads, and it's already like maybe 2 hours and two and a half, 3 hours rush hour trying to get from Guelph
to
Toronto.
Yeah.
And then VIA is federal, which seems like a silly thing because VIA is federal. VIA was cut way back during the Harper years.
And
the Mulroney years. But yeah. I mean, the most recent cuts were during the Harper years where they don't even have a ticket agent at.
You got to go Kitchener.
Yeah.
Any special things, whatever, a coupon? You got to go to Kitchener.
Yeah.
Demented.
And in the three years of Trudeau thus far, there has been absolutely no sign that they want to restore or thinking about restoring any of that service, the VIA, or doing any sort of expansion of VIA. In fact, it's almost like a non-issue. So are we even doing? Is my question.
What the hell's happening? We don't know. It'll be more GO trains or something, or a little pump cart you take into.
Oh, I'd actually get behind that.
Maybe not today, but let's, you know, May. Starting in May.
On a nice spring day? Yes, absolutely.
Take a pump cart.
And then the other thing was that, we'll just mention this briefly, that David French, Ford's chief of staff, on October 17th, when marijuana was legalized, apparently wanted police to go out and round up all
the usual suspects.
And close all the unauthorized pot retailers and have them.
Was that for the optics?
Yeah.
The perp walk
well, that's
and all
what
that?
He, that's what he said. Like, we'll do it for the TV news. People in
England
for
really
TV news.
You can't really legally say that, right? But.
Well, he said it, but I mean, they're pushing for the integrity commissioner to investigate, and the integrity commissioner is maybe thinking about looking at it, so we might see.
Which means they'll probably get fired. But anyway, yeah. Think Mueller.
Oh, my
goodness.
Or everybody
else they fired so far. So environment fired. Anyway, yeah.
True. You never know.
We really could have given that a half an hour.
Yeah.
More next week on this and other CFR news stations.
There will be more. So we want to touch on the environment because there's been a lot of environment news lately, including the cutting of the environmental commissioner here in Ontario. And this came like 2 days after she came out. Her name was Diane Sachs. Her name is still Diane Sachs, but she's not going to be the environmental commissioner after the next couple of months.
I can't handle it. Yeah.
But I mean, this was a couple of days after she came out and said that 1,327 times in the last year, raw sewage was dumped into Ontario waterways. Mm. And over half of those was because of inadequate infrastructure in municipalities where they still don't separate sewage and storm water. So when you get a lot of heavy rain and it starts to back up the system. They just open the valves and let it all run out. And if your system combines sewage and stormwater, then that gets real ugly really fast if it ends up in, say, the river that runs through the town or the lake that your town is on the shores of. So that's the kind of thing you would expect the environmental commissioner to look at, but now she can't look at it anymore because he doesn't have a job. So that's just one of the environmental pieces going on this week.
Well, let other people look at it. Because that's always the line. Well, we're looking at it. It's like, yeah, everybody's looking at it. What are you actually doing?
Yeah.
Another study out at the federal level saying that Canada is one of the worst offenders in terms of trying to hit climate goals, which it doesn't seem that we're very effectively doing that. We were included, grouped together with Canada, Russia, China, and Saudi Arabia.
Good group.
And if we keep, you know, consuming and putting out greenhouse gases the way we're going, we're going to contribute to a 5-degree warming of the planet. Now, all these numbers,
which is 3 degrees too many.
Yes. They had this sort of ranked schedule. It's like, well, if everybody consumed like so-and-so, then you would contribute this much. There's quite a few of them were lower, like Brazil was at 4. And it's almost like soccer scores, really. But, again, not funny. But it's like it's one of these studies they'll just point to. Like I said, they'll just say, well, we're looking at it. It's a per capita thing in that, we're a cold country. And then the other thing that'll be said is like, well, China, China's doing this famously under Harper. It's like, well, if they're not going to do anything, we're not going to do anything either.
Well, the fascinating thing is that same report said that the only country that has set targets to mitigate the 2-degree increase that is going to be the global killer. The only country that's done that is India. And, of course, China and India are mentioned in the same breath as countries that aren't doing enough to fight global climate change and are the real enemies because there's so many people who live there. But India is one of the people who are saying, we're going to make the cuts. We're going to try and reach it.
And India's over a billion people now.
India's over a billion people. Also very hot.
China,
India,
half the planet, pretty much, right? Pretty close. Third?
Maybe a little
40%?
Less than half. 40% sounds right.
We'll call it 40%. And then, of course,
these are all numbers that have not been vetted.
Yes. And we didn't really talk about this, the famous, now famous, infamous Maclean's cover of The Resistance.
Oh, my goodness.
This, of course, is the Conservative Party's. I didn't realize that was a composite picture. Of course, couldn't get those guys all together.
I couldn't imagine you could.
But it's sort of, it's The Resistance, well, it doesn't hint at the gist of the story, which I only read sort of shorter versions of, was that, these are the people that are going to fight the unfair climate or the unfair carbon tax.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
But when you've also got Rachel Notley, who's NDP, it's like, we really need this pipeline. We really want a pipeline, even though the oil market is tanking.
Right.
They're blaming the lack of the pipeline. Jason Kenney. He's bracketing it the Trudeau NDP agenda. So now it's like anything left of Trudeau is responsible for oil not moving. And I don't know if that's necessarily responsible for the $12 a barrel price. But of course, then Doug Ford can say, I've reduced the price of gas. Like I said, I would. So it's this weird.
Well, he could always be thanking Saudi Arabia for reducing the price
of
gas.
He won't, though. It's this weird, weird circle. Like, I told you it'd be 10 cents less. Fill up your F-150. So there's, again, it's kind of like our story off the top where it's like there's all these small things adding up to like still nothing getting done. They're looking at it.
Well, of course, the fall economic update from the feds was yesterday and there was nothing in there about the environment. There was nothing in there about even like
all
the carbon tax
business.
Stuff. Yeah.
Business.
And, media funding that people like me are probably unlikely to get, but
You never know. I think we're going to talk about that in a future date too, because that is a very interesting story.
Right, but this is the thing. There's been a lot of news about the $14 a barrel oil, and Calgary and Edmonton are crying for help, and no one is talking about the fact that this country's made commitments to reduce greenhouse gases. No one, and they're not talking about how Alberta oil is the dirtiest. They're not talking about the environment as a whole. It's so hard to get any news about the environment at all. You know, when you hear oil on the news, it's all about, you know, pity Alberta. Their oil is cheap as, you know, yeah. I think I literally saw on CTV News last week, somebody said, you know, for the price of two lattes, you can get a barrel of oil from the oil patch.
Why don't I just get a car that runs on straight barrels of oil?
Yeah, so it's like,
Yeah, and it's like you say, too, about things, and the only other thing, too, is when it's something catastrophic like this oil leak off of Newfoundland.
Right.
Where they're saying that the full scale of the devastation will never, ever be known. So in other words...
Because the seas are too choppy to investigate.
And, of course, the burning question is, why is Husky Oil trying to produce oil in an intense storm where, you know, things decouple, things move around.
Right.
Because they can. Because no one will go after them. No one will enforce it. We've seen it in the Gulf of Mexico. And then there's another leak in the Gulf of Mexico where it's like, well, we don't actually know where it's leaking. And we don't think we'll ever be able to cap it. And everybody just shrugs. And it's like, oh, it's a federal responsibility. That's Florida's responsibility. No, it's in international waters. They all pass the buck. And the earth is getting absolutely crapped on.
And it's the problem here in Canada is that resource extraction has been now sort of tied to patriotism and the capital of the country. You know, if you see,
I reduced the price of gas as well as cars.
Right.
What was he saying this week? Oh, the cars.
Right, but it's now become the product. I mean, until Harper, I don't really remember a lot of people talking about Alberta oil as sort of like the linchpin of the Canadian economy. Granted, a lot has changed since then. Particularly here in Ontario, where manufacturing had its issues. But
Harper did his corporate time with Imperial Oil in Alberta, right?
And it's
so
all
there's
about,
a link
but
there.
But now it's all about oil, and it's like,
we need to improve the price of it.
We can't make it about oil, because that's sort of what's killing us. One of the things that's killing us. And I also wanted to mention that we had the social assistance thing from the Ontario PCs come back today. By the end of the month, we're supposed to get back their quote-unquote climate change plan. And there was an article in the CBC, I think today or yesterday, where it looks like they're going to follow the Australia model, which is to set up a fund to encourage polluters to pollute less, which has not worked in Australia. Yeah. Actually, Australia's emissions have gone up since this was enacted in 2015. It seems like polluters have sort of taken the money and, I don't know, burning
it's
it.
It's that same logic, like I said earlier, about removing the rent control, build more houses, which is, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. The only thing that's going to work is transitioning away from fossil fuels. And there's lots of talk about that, and there's people doing that, but until we get into the decarbonization, which I believe is the word, the decarbonization business, and get, as they're calling it in the States, a Green New Deal, hearkening back to the 30s, dirty 30s, as they're called. You know, are we in for the dirty 20s again, where it's just, oh, man. I mean, the main thing with the complaints about the price of barrel of oil, it's like, you guys want to end capitalism. This is what the market is doing. They'll blame all kinds of things. Like, if that's what it's worth, then suck it up. Well, you want to be a total free marketeer? Right. It's like, if it's worth a buck,
also,
that's what you get.
Also, our oil industry is heavily subsidized.
Of course, and they'll never admit to that. Taxed poorly.
Right, and when oil is doing good, Alberta spends like a drunken sailor. They spend like they just got their tax rebate check and they bought a Blu-ray player, an 80-inch TV, an Xbox, 20 games, and they went out for the keg for steak dinners like five nights in a row.
That sounds fantastic. How can we get in on... No.
But that's Alberta, right? And that's they're handing out checks rather than like saying oil prices are high today. So they're going to bottom out tomorrow. Maybe we should put some money in the bank, and then they cry poverty like we're losing $80 billion a day, or maybe not that much, but $80 million a day.
Big bucks.
You know, and it's like, well, oil was high, and then it goes low, and this is the yin-yang we're on. And so it makes good economic sense to me that if you have a product that is worth $100 one day and $14 the next, maybe you should try and find something a bit more stable. At least I'm not a business expert, but I'm told that's what investing is all about.
Yeah, do it Norwegian style. Norwegian oil. Where everybody's a millionaire. Anyway, for another day.
Yeah, we can't solve everything today.
No.
Or anything.
We try, but... Oh.
Okay, you can connect to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. You can find us on Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, or find us at OS_Guelph on Twitter. You can also find this and past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I can be found at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, and you can go to guelphpolitico.ca to see my written stuff.
Wonderful. Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. My written stuff is at spanderbook.wordpress.com, and don't forget cfru.ca. Check out the donation button. Lots of wonderful prizes and things being given away and the possibility to win. And we'd love you to contribute to what we do because we do it because we love it.
Only the possibility to win. It's not true socialism.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like a good one for another day. So, and if you want to let us know any topics you want us to cover and have a chat about, any of the channels, you can find us.
And you know what? Our next week is our 200th episode. So
really?
If you have like listener requests or you want us to like have any pressing questions you want to ask, like send those in too.
Yes, that would be a great idea.
Yeah. So DJ Sounds Good to Me will be here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, also listener and campus supported radio. So we'll be back here next Thursday for more open sources number 200.
Woohoo!
And we will see you then.